Tell you the truth, I come here not so much l'shem shamayim, but very selfishly. First of all, it's less than 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, and I've looked back on my past year, and I could use as many zechuyos as I can get before Rosh Hashanah comes, and speaking here for Leiv Echad is a very quality schus. So I'm selfish. I need the schus, therefore I came here. And secondly, it gives me a chance to see my family. I have three families here, and surprisingly, they even showed up to this, even though they know who I am. And not only my children, but even my grandchildren. Not only that, even two of my granddaughters from Moshav Matityo came with me. So that's also a selfish reason to want to be here. However, I think they also have a selfish reason because they told me that they expect me to take them for pizza and ice cream after I finish. So I'm not sure if they're here for the drasha or not. In any case, Rosh Hashanah is called by the Torah Yom Trua. The Targum translates that Yom Yibava, literally a day of wailing, a day of crying. And the truth is that there is a very big machlokus whether one should in fact cry on Rosh Hashanah actually, and there are four opinions, so whatever you do, you're fulfilling one of them. One opinion says that in fact you should cry on Rosh Hashanah, and somebody who does not cry has to inspect and see maybe there's something wrong with their neshama. Second opinion says that one should not cry at all on Rosh Hashanah. Just the opposite. One should be tremendously happy that he's able to coronate the Ribono Shel Olam on Rosh Hashanah, and that is the motif of Rosh Hashanah, and one should be happy. When it blows the shofar, should be happy. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. Others say that if one feels like crying, then they should give in to their emotion and cry, but one shouldn't force himself to cry on Rosh Hashanah. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says just the opposite. If you feel like crying, you should overpower the feeling and not cry on Rosh Hashanah. And if you don't feel like crying, you should force yourself to cry. And that's a good chinuch in how to overpower your yetzer hara. In any case, therefore, as I said, whatever you do, cry or not cry, right, there is some opinion that supports what you're doing. But that's not the ikkar of the crying on Rosh Hashanah. The crying on Rosh Hashanah we do through a kli called the shofar. The shofar is the vehicle that brings out the crying that the Ribono Shel Olam says that we have to do on Rosh Hashanah. And we are fulfilling the mitzvah of Yom Trua, Yom Yibava, through the cries that we do through the shofar. And the Netziv says that the Torah refers to Rosh Hashanah not only as Yom Trua, but also as Yom Zichron Trua. To tell me that it's not only the sound of the shofar that is significant, but it's also thinking and understanding what that cry of the shofar really means. There's also a zichron. There's also an idea, a remembrance, to know what it's all about. And perhaps tonight I will aid you and myself in thinking a little bit as to what a person is supposed to have in mind when he hears the cry of the shofar, which is the vehicle to give us the ability to cry out our hearts on Rosh Hashanah to the Ribono Shel Olam. The Gemara says in Brachos, Miyom shenechra beis hamikdash, af al pi shesharei tfila ninalu, sharei dima lo ninalu. Since the beis hamikdash has been destroyed, the gates of prayer have been locked. Doesn't mean that prayer is ineffective, chas v'sholom, Everybody, Yeshiva Bacher knows that if the gates are locked, there are still ways of getting in. But it's not so easy. Not easy to get in if the gates are locked. However, Shari Dima, the gates of tears have never been locked. Those gates are opened. And the way Rashi learns, the way the Maral explains, it's not that Stam a person cries. But there's a kind of prayer that is called prayer without tears, and there's a kind of prayer that's called prayer with tears, and it doesn't make a difference if you cry or you don't. It's a different kind of tefillah. One kind of tefillah, explains the Maral, is the kind of tefillah that is very active, tefillah that causes an effect. The Rabbanu Shalom created a way of bringing his influence into this world, tremendous seder and machinery that brings spiritual machinery that brings God's influence into the world, and the energy source for that entire system is our prayers, our mitzvahs, our Torah learning. So we cause an active effect by davening. We bring that influence into the world. That active effect, that energy source, needed very much the Beis HaMikdash to give it the source of that energy. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that active source was diminished, and therefore the gates have been locked of that kind of tefillah. But there's another kind of tefillah, and that's called the tefillah of tears. Crying is a representation of a person feeling that he can't do it on his own. He feels at a loss, he feels broken, he cries out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, please Ribbono Shel Olam, help me. And that is the kind of tefillah that represents total submission, where a person feels that he submits himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam and has mishabed himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that kind of tefillah wasn't affected by the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That kind of tefillah doesn't need some active energy, just the opposite. That tefillah is a representation of feeling passive, of feeling submissive, of putting yourself totally in the hands of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is the concept of crying. Crying is representative of the fact that a person knows he can't do it on his own, and he needs the Ribbono Shel Olam to help him. And the crying comes from the deepest recesses of a person's neshama. The word bechi has a connection to the word becha, from within. And the word bechi in gematria is the same gematria as lev, as your heart. Very significant to this evening about Belev Echad. We're also speaking about hearts. But crying is something that comes from within. It's an expression of a person's heart, his total being mishabed himself to the Ribbono Shel Olam, his total subservience and submission to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is the greatest schus a person can have on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Person wants to be zochet badin if he thinks he's going to do it by presenting his zechuyos, how much he deserves it. None of us deserve anything. But if we recognize that we don't deserve, and we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, I can't do it on my own, I don't deserve it on my own, but I'm totally submissive and subservient to you, and I'm putting myself in your hands, that's the way to be zochet badin. So it's the crying of Rosh Hashanah that creates that feeling of submissiveness, of subservience to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why the motif of Rosh Hashanah actually is making ourselves a sacrifice. A sacrifice is where you give something over, a surrogate, vicariously. You take that animal and you sacrifice it to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and through that animal you're sacrificing yourself, you're giving yourself totally over to the Ribbono Shel Olam. on all of the Yom Tovim it says v'hikravtem olah, you should offer up a sacrifice. But on Rosh Hashanah it says v'asisem olah, as if to say make yourself the sacrifice, you are the olah. It's one of the reasons why next week we'll be saying shlichos, Ashkenazim at least, because we always say shlichos a minimum of 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. This year we make the minimum. Rosh Hashanah is Thursday. There are 4 days between next Motzei Shabbos and Thursday. In those years where Rosh Hashanah falls earlier in the week, on a Tuesday, so then you start shlichos the week before. You have many, many more shlichos. Why a minimum of 4 days? One of the reasons is that a sacrifice, before you bring it, certain sacrifices have to be checked for blemishes for 4 days. So since we are going to bring ourselves as a sacrifice before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah, we need 4 days to inspect ourselves for blemishes before Rosh Hashanah comes. And one of the greatest ideas in Rosh Hashanah, and one of the things that Rosh Hashanah commemorates, is Akedas Yitzchak, the closest we ever came to a human sacrifice, sanctioned by the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Rosh Hashanah is the day that we submit ourselves, make ourselves totally subservient as a sacrifice to the Ribbono Shel Olam. What's the power of crying? How powerful are tears? Chazal say, Kol Amorit Mos Al Odom Kosher. A plain, simple Jew, not that I know of any plain, simple Jews, but whatever that means, an Odom Kosher doesn't have to be a Gadol B'Yisrael, doesn't have to be a big Rosh Yeshiva or a Rav, or anybody else, just a plain Odom Kosher. Kol Amorit Mos, somebody who cries at his demise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sofrom Umonam, the Ribbono Shel Olam counts every tear qualitatively and quantitatively, and he puts it Bebeis Kinozov in his treasure house. That's how valuable those tears are. They ask a question. There's another Gemara that says Ein LaKadosh Baruch Hu Bebeis Kinozov El Otzer Sheyira Shamayim. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam have in his treasure, in his safe? Only Yirah Shamayim. Why? Because everything else is in God's hands. Hakol bidei Shamayim, chutz mi Yirah Shamayim. Person doesn't save up things that he can get plenty of. It's not valuable to him. The only thing he saves up is something that is rare, that he can't get a lot of. So the only thing the Ribbono Shel Olam can create is Yirah Shamayim. That's something we have to do. So the only thing the Ribbono Shel Olam feels valuable enough to put in his safe, in his treasure house, is Yirah Shamayim. But that seems to be contradicted by this Gemara. Here the Gemara says there's something else in the safe. There's the tears that people shed for an Odom Kosher. The answer is very simple. There's no contradiction at all. Because those tears that a person sheds for an Odom Kosher shows that a person feels that something's missing. Something's missing in my life. Something's missing in the world that it's worth kedai to cry about. And to feel that I'm broken, and I'm submitting myself to the Ribbono Shel Olam to take that loss and to repair it. That is the greatest exhibition of Yirah Shamayim there could be. So those tears are the epitome, they are the manifestation of what Yirah Shamayim is. So God only has Yirah Shamayim in his treasure house, but the tears that one sheds over an Odom Kosher is the quintessence of what Yirah Shamayim is. It's not only our tears that are effective. The Medrash says that when Esav came in and found that Yaakov Avinu had taken his brachas, so he said to Yitzchak Avinu, HaBrocha Achas Yesh Lecha Avi Borcheni Gamoni, you must have something left. Give me a bracha too. And Yitzchak told him in no uncertain terms, there were no brachas left. Nothing left to give. And Esav began to cry. It says that he cried one tear from his right eye, and because of that, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. He cried a second tear from his left eye, and because of that, the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And the third tear welled up back in his first right eye. And if it had fallen, there never would be a third Beis HaMikdash. But that much tears Esav didn't have. It welled up, but it didn't fall. The meaning, and after that, Yitzchak surprisingly found a slew of brachas that he gave to Esav. 2 seconds before, he said, there are no more brachas. Where did he get these brachas from? When Esav cried for them, and he wanted them, and he realized how much he needed them, and he realized how much he was missing, and how broken he was, those tears were so powerful that they created new brachas. And when we don't appreciate those brachas that Esav at that moment appreciated with two tears, and it's a tremendous, tremendous chova. It is a something that goes against us and says that if we don't want those brachas and we don't appreciate them, we don't live up to the brachas that we got, and Esav wanted them so much, then that causes the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Even our enemies understood the power of our tears. It says that when Nebuchadnezzar sent his Sar Tzava, the head of his army, to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, to exile the Jewish people, so he told Nebuzaradan, keep the Jewish people busy when you exile them. Don't let them sit and rest. Keep them moving. Because I'm afraid if they rest, they'll have time to cry, and if they cry, we won't be able to exile them. That's the power of crying. And that's what he did. He kept them moving and moving until they crossed the Euphrates, Nahar Pros, and they already were out of Eretz Israel in Bavel. And then the pasuk says, Al Naros Bavel Sham Yoshavnu. We didn't sit before that. They didn't give us a chance to rest. We didn't have a chance even to cry. But once we came to Naros Bavel, we crossed the Euphrates, Sham Yoshavnu. There finally they let us sit and rest. Gam Bachinu, and then we cried. B'zochreinu Esiyom. And the Medrash continues that at that moment, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who had been away, come back and found that the Jews had been exiled, and he ran after them. And he caught up with them sitting by the rivers of Babylon, crying. And he said to them the following, Meid ani aleichem shamayim v'aretz. I bring as testimony the heavens and the earth. Had you cried one tear like this while you still were in Eretz Israel, you never would have gone into exile. Now's not the time to cry. Should have cried before. That's the power of tears. And we know that the power of tears is the power, the potential we have that one day Mashiach will come and all Jews will return to Eretz Israel with a Beis HaMikdash. And what brings that about? Rachel Mevako al Boneho, Rachel Imenu constantly cries for her children, the Einam, who are no longer in Eretz Israel with a Beis HaMikdash. And the Rabban Shom tells her, Mini kolech mi bechi. Stop crying, Rachel. Because your crying is very, very effective. Bishavu v'yesh tikva lachriseich. Because of your crying, there's hope. Bishavu bonim l'gvulam. And eventually, all of Klal Yisrael return in the schus of the crying of Rachel Imenu. And women have a very special, special part of this crying, because it says that noshim dimoseim krovos, women's tears are more easily brought out than men. There may be exceptions to that, but the rule is usually like that. You look at the Sidurim in the women's section, they are a lot more tear-stained than the Sidurim in the men's section. So Rachel Imenu represents the crying of all Jewish women. That's a tremendous force. That is the force that gives the potential for Mashiach eventually to come. They ask a question. If the gates of tears are never closed, then why are there gates? If you have gates that you never close, why do you need gates for it? And they say, because even though the gates of tears don't close, there are tears that are not proper. And for those tears, the gates do close. There's bechiya shel chinam, there's useless, wasted crying, and there's bechiya shel mamish. And there's crying that is significant, and the crying that we said has that tremendous power, positive power, even greater than tefillah. What is bechiya shel chinam, the kind of crying the Jews did in the desert when the spies came back, the meraglim came back with their bad report, and they cried that night out of feeling dejected, abandoned, there's no hope, they felt hopeless. When one cries because he feels abandoned and hopeless, and he loses his entire bitachon, his entire trust and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that kind of crying is possible. And for those tears, the gates close. So what is bechiya shel mamish? What is a proper kind of crying? Kind of crying that the shofar represents. The shofar has two sounds of crying. There's the shvarim, and there's a truah. And then we blow them together, shvarim and truah also. So really three different. Shvarim, truah, and shvarim, truah together. But we never blow a shvarim or a truah or a shvarim truah by itself. It's always sandwiched between two tekiyas. A tekiya lifaneha and a tekiya sha'achareha. A tekiya before the shvarim and truah and a tekiya after the shvarim and truah. The tekiya represents a feeling of faith and trust, of simcha. I know that I started out in this world, Elokai Nishomesh and Osato B'Tahorahi. I started out on the right path. We don't believe in original sin, as other religions believe. But we believe in original purity. We came into this world pure. When we were little children, until we were bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, we remained pure. And then the trouble started. And then we swerved a little bit, or sometimes a lot, from that path and blemished our neshamas. But I realized, Rabbanu Shel Olam, that I started out on the right path with one tekiyah, nice, unbroken sound. And Rabbanu Shel Olam, I have faith in you, and I was connected to you. And then came the shvarim, I broken, and the truah, an alarm, which we'll discuss in a second. But you know, Rabbanu Shel Olam, I didn't give up because of that. And I don't feel hopeless, and I don't feel abandoned, because I end again with a tekiyah, there's hope. If I do everything in my power to try and rectify the situation, I know that you'll help me. Because even though a person has to do it on his own, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyira shamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven except your moral choices. Whether we choose to do good or bad, we have to make the choice. But ilmolei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ozro eino yochalo, in the end, the final analysis, if the Rabbanu Shel Olam doesn't help us to overcome our Yetzirah, it's impossible for us to do it. So Rabbanu Shel Olam, I'm making the right choice, and I'm going to do everything in my power. And I know that if I do that, you'll help me. You'll see to it that I overcome the difficulties and that I'm successful. And therefore, after the Shvarim and the Trua, we blow another Tekiah to show how much faith we have that everything is going to be okay. We don't feel dejected. We don't feel hopeless. We don't feel abandoned. But we have a tremendous amount of faith and trust that the Ribbono Shel Olam will make things good. I always like to compare it to the crying of a baby. A baby can't really conceptualize what's wrong with it, but it knows that something's wrong. Feels wet, hot, cold, hungry. Doesn't know exactly how to put it into words. Can't put it into words. Not probably even conceptualize it in thoughts. All he knows is he's uncomfortable. Something's wrong. He's missing something. But he knows one thing, that if he makes enough noise and he cries, there will appear the form of a human being, usually in the form of a woman, at least in my house, who will know exactly what the problem is and be able to take care of it. That's how we cry on Rosh Hashanah through the shofar to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam, we don't even know sometimes what the problem is. We know something's wrong. We can't sometimes conceptualize it or put our finger on it. But we know if we cry out to you and we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, we're going to do whatever we can. But we're limited in our power. And we need you to help us. That you'll be there. And you'll know exactly what the problem is. And you'll be able to take care of it. That's the crying that we cry through the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Those are the various kinds of crying that the shofar represents. The shofar first has a shvarim. A person has to feel that he's not complete, that he's broken, that he's missing something. He's strayed away from the path where he could have been as perfect as possible, and now he's imperfect because of his sins. The word chet means that something's missing. I'm not complete. I'm imperfect. And I feel that I'm missing something because of that imperfection. I feel broken. And then there's another kind of crying, where you realize that because of your imperfection, because something's wrong, there's something to be alarmed about. And you're in a very precarious and dangerous position because you're not where you should be. That's the cry of an alarm. That's a trua. The trua is an alarm cry. And sometimes a person realizes that it's not just an alarm or feeling broken, but because I feel broken, I realize there's an alarm. They go together. That's the Shvarim Trua. And if you think about it, all of the Torah readings and Haftorahs of Rosh Hashanah, each one represents a different kind of crying. On the first day, we read of the crying of Hagar. Hagar is wandering in the desert with her son Yishmael. They run out of water, and her son, who was sick before this, is in danger of dying. She throws him under a bush, and she goes away. She can't bear to see her son die, and she cries her eyes out, cries in alarm. Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm in danger. My son is in danger. I'm in danger of losing him. She cries the trua of alarm. And the Ribbono Shel Olam answers her. And he creates a well. She takes water. She revives her son. That same day, the first day of Rosh Hashanah in the Haftorah, we read of another crying, also a woman. The crying of Hannah. Because she feels unfulfilled, imperfect, missing something. She wants a child so badly. And she doesn't have a child. And she wants a child not just because of her motherly instincts. She wants a child to dedicate to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to build the world. And she feels that she is not fulfilling her potential. Something's missing. And she cries the cry of a shvarim, of a broken person. And the Ribbono Shel Olam hears her crying and sees her tears, and she's given a child. The second day, we read of Akedas Yitzchak, and Chazal say that when Avraham Avinu took the knife and was ready to shech Yitzchak, so his eyes were flowing with tears. Tears of joy that he was able to fulfill God's will, but tears also of sadness that he's going to lose his son. But the tears represented total subservience to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't understand this, and in my eyes I'm not very happy about shechting my son, but if that's what you want, I am totally subservient and submissive to you. Those are the tears of the shofar in general, submitting ourselves as a sacrifice to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the second day in the Haftorah, we read of the tears of Rachel Imenu. Rachel Mevaka al Boneho, the combination of crying because she's missing her children, they're no longer in Eretz Yisrael, at the same time an alarm, what's going to be with the Jewish people in Golus. So that's the combination of the Shvarim and the Truah. The feeling of inadequacy, of loss, and at the same time, because of that loss, because of that being broken, there's reason to be alarmed. Those are all the sounds of the shofar. The Shvarim, the Truah, the Shvarim Truah, represented by the cries of Hannah, and the cries of Hagar, and the cries of Rachel Imenu. But they're all sandwiched between two tkiyas. Because as much as broken as we are and imperfect, and as much as there's reason to be alarmed, but we know that if we cry, and we do whatever we can to try to right the situation and correct it, then the Ribbono Shel Olam will help us and everything will turn out to be okay. The blowing of the shofar is done twice. We do it once when we're sitting down. We don't actually sit at all, but theoretically we could sit. After the reading of the Torah, we're not in the middle of Shemona Esrei, so conceivably you could sit for that tkiyah, that minig is to stand. But you could sit. And that's before we daven, we're not saying any brachas, we just blow the shofar. And then we blow the shofar again in Musaf, together with the brachas of Shemona Esrei, after the brachas of Malchios, Sophronos, and Shofros, each time we blow the shofar. Those are the main blowing of the shofar. We'll get to the minig of blowing shofar even after that. But those are the main times. And the Gemara says the reason we blow shofar twice is la'arbe v'sasotn. We want to confuse the sotn. Because the first time he hears us blow shofar, okay, so we blew shofar. The second time, Rashi says, he sees that we really appreciate this mitzvah, and that really confuses him. When Jews appreciate a mitzvah. And Tosfos says, the first time he understands we're blowing shofar because we have to blow shofar. That doesn't bother him so much. The second time, he's afraid that maybe this is the shofar of Yimei Mashiach, Tchias HaNation. Maybe the time has come for the resurrection of the dead. They already blew shofar. What's this next shofar? So he's confused. And he thinks that perhaps this second sound of the shofar is the sound of the shofar that heralds the resurrection of the dead, when he will no longer be effective, no longer be around. And that bothers him tremendously. Now, the Satan is the Yetzer Hara. He's a Malach HaMoves. He's a very smart person. At least my Yetzer Hara is very smart. He's not really dumb at all. You got to be really dumb after thousands of years of hearing Jews blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, right, and hearing them blow it a second time, not to know what's going on. He could buy a luach. He could buy a kisser shulchan aruch. Just look inside. You'll see the Jews blow shofar. What in the world is he afraid of? Every year he makes the same mistake. Believe me, my Yetzer Hara is not so dumb. Very, very smart. Very smart. He knows how to outsmart me daily. But what is this? Yitzhara thinks that the Sultan thinks that this is the sound of Tchias HaNesim. And the answer is, we blow the shofar the first time to arouse ourselves, because we don't really feel anything, even on Rosh Hashanah. We need to arouse ourselves to those feelings. So first we blow the shofar and we arouse ourselves to realize something's wrong. We are missing something. There is a reason to be alarmed. There is a reason to submit ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then once we're aroused, we blow the shofar again after the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei, after we've already conceptualized what's wrong. I'm already intellectually understand that there's something wrong. I've aroused myself to think, and now I've thought, and I've said, Malchio, Zichrono, Shofros. And now I blow the shofar again. Because that shofar already is Ribbono Shel Olam. After I've said everything, and I know intellectually, I want to speak to you again through the shofar like the baby. It's beyond my understanding. What I understand, I've told you. But there's something even more than that. And that's the real Tchias HaNesim. It's not the resurrection of the dead of the future. But when a person's sin is to a certain degree is killed away, he's part of himself. Chet is modest. Rei anochi nosim lefnechem ayom es hachayim v'es hatov v'es hamodest v'es hara. Good, that which is good is substantial. That which is real in this world, that's life. And when you veer away from the purpose of life, so to a certain degree, you've killed a part of yourself. And when you return and correct that, that's Tchias HaNesim. That is Tchias HaNesim. That's what bothers the Sultan. It's not the future Tchias HaNesim. It's the actual Tchias HaNesim that everyone goes through when they blow the shofar that second time and reach more than just an intellectual understanding. But they cry out like babies to the Ribbono Shel Olam, when I can't understand Ribbono Shel Olam, but I have faith that you'll understand and you'll help me. I've done everything I can do, and now I put myself in your hands. That is real Tchias HaNesim. And the minig is to blow 100 kolos. We blow 30 kolos before Musaf, and another 30 kolos in Musaf, and then another 30 after Musaf, and another 10. 100 altogether. Why? That's based on the fact that Ein Sisra, the mother of Sisra, cried 100 cries. So we also do that. Why? What do we have to do with Ein Sisra? Again, a woman cried. Why did Sisra's mother cry? Sisra went out into battle against Devorah, and he lost, and he was killed by Yoel. Usually Sisra's mother was accustomed to the fact that her son Sisra was a very, very astute warrior, and he always came back from battle victorious and with a lot of spoils, a lot of booty. And this is the first time that he tarried in coming back, and there weren't any cell phones at that time, so she couldn't call his cell phone to find out if he was okay or not. So she didn't know. She had no idea what was doing with her son. Her friends told her, don't worry. You know why he's late? There's so much spoils and so much booty that it's taking a tremendous amount of time to collect it all and divide it up. That's why he hasn't come home so fast. He's been victorious and everything is fine, and they're so busy splitting up all the spoils of the battle that he's tarried to come back. So if that's the truth, she should cry out of simcha. She should give a cry of joy. Her acquaintances, not her friends, said, you know, maybe that's not the case. Maybe, you know, your son's been wounded. And even though maybe they won the battle, but he's been taken to a hospital and he's being cared for, that's why he didn't come back. If that's the case, then she has to cry a cry of alarm. Her poor son is in the hospital, knew what was going to be with him. And her enemy said to her, oh, sister, you know why your aim sister, you know why your son didn't come back? He's dead. He was killed in the battle. that, she had to cry a cry of brokenness, of loss. She didn't know what to cry. She should be happy. She should be alarmed. She should feel loss. The number 100 is the combination of all the different possible kinds of crying that could be. That's the number 100. It's like we make 100 brachas in the day. All the different combinations and permutations is represented by the number 100. She cried every combination of crying. I don't know what to cry. Should I be happy? Should I be alarmed? Should I be mourning? So she cried 100 cries to encompass all of them. That's what we do also. Rabbi Nisson, we don't know exactly. Should we feel lost? Should we feel alarmed? Should we feel happy? So we cry out our hearts through the shofar 100 kolos. Rabbi Shalom, we're like babies. We don't know what we're crying for, but we know something's wrong. Something's not right. Just like Aim Sisra, my son's not back, I don't know why. So I'm going to cry every possible crying there can be. You figure it out, Rabbi Shalom, which one is the one that's significant. And you take care of it. And in that respect, Rosh Hashanah, we say every day, L'David Hashem Ori, Ori Zeh Rosh Hashanah. It lights the way to Yom Kippur. The Yishi, the salvation, comes on Yom Kippur. On Rosh Hashanah, we don't do tshuva. We arouse ourselves to realize something's wrong and to feel it deeply and to blow our crying through the shofar in all the possible combinations and permutations of crying. Joy and alarm and brokenness. At the same time, we have a tremendous amount of faith. Rabbanu Shalom, I recognize now something's wrong. I'm going to do something about it. I have now 8 more days of Aser Simei Tshuva to repent and to work to correct the situation. And I know that if I work on it and do everything I can, then in the end, Rabbanu Shalom, you and Yom Kippur are going to come and say, Salachti Kivarecha. And you're going to do your part, Rabbanu Shalom, and you're going to forgive me. That is how Rosh Hashanah lights the way to Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah is the light that opens up my desire and my feeling of need to do something. That the situation needs correction. It needs something to be done. Before Rosh Hashanah, we don't even realize that. It's the crying of Rosh Hashanah that reminds me that I need to do something. The rest of the Aseret Simei Tshuva, and then the Rabbanu Shalom will do his part also. At the end of Ne'ilah, the last pizmon we say ends the following way. Yehi ratzon l'fanecha shomea kol b'chios. May it be your will, the one who hears the sound of our crying. Not necessarily the crying itself, but the sound of crying that comes from the shofar, that comes from inside. You can't cry on the outside, at least let your heart cry out. Shetosim dimoseinu benot cholios. Put our tears into that treasure house. Into your repository for tears. And tears are very, very significant things. Tears are salt water. Salt is a symbol of preservation. Salt preserves something. When you cry, one idea is that gives tremendous preservation. You think that you're crying because you're at a loss, because there's an alarm, it's true. But if you cry those tears, they're so special. They are the oil that we oil the machinery to be able to correct the situation. And tears blind your eyes because you realize you can't see with your eyes of flesh and blood. And when your eyes are clouded and you don't look with your eyes of flesh and blood, then you look through the eyes of your heart and you begin to feel what's wrong and to feel what has to be done, and then you are moved to do tshuva. So we tell the Rabbanu Shalom on Rosh Hashanah, we began to cry, Shomea kol b'chios, and you Rabbanu Shalom are called, Shomea kol truas amo Yisrael, you hear our cry, Shomea kol b'chios, and you realize how precious those tears are. Put our tears in your repository, in your safe in the treasure house. V'satzileinu mikol gzeiros achzorios, and save us from all the cruel decrees, whether they're cruel decrees from our enemies or sometimes from those who think they're our friends. A lot of cruel decrees in the world, all over the world, here in Eretz Yisrael, decrees that have to do with life and death, and decrees that have to do with monetary things, all kinds of decrees that are floating in the air, and we need to be saved from all those decrees. Shesatzileinu migzeiros achzorios. Why? Ki levav lechol levav einenu sluyos. Because our eyes are set only on you. We're not looking for help from anywhere else. Only from you, Rabban Lashalom. I totally submit myself, totally be subservient to you, Rabban Lashalom. That will cure all the gzeiros lows, all the gzeiros achzorios. There's one more kind of crying, and that maybe is the worst of all. And that's the kind of crying that we have to be sensitive to. The Rabban Hashem, if we want him to be sensitive to our crying, then we have to be sensitive to the crying of others. There's a story of two Jewish chayalim, soldiers, after the Six-Day War, when we finally regained control over the Kosel HaMa'arovi after 20 years of not being able to go there. So Jews flocked from everywhere to have the opportunity to daven by the Kosel again. And they cried their eyes out by the Kosel HaMa'arovi. Tens, hundreds, thousands of Jews. There were two chayalim who were Russian immigrants. Came from Russia, knew nothing about Yiddishkeit. After the Russian oppression for 70 years, they did a good job of making people forget about Yiddishkeit completely. They came to Eretz Yisrael, they went into the army. And they were guarding the Kosel. And they were amazed. What is this wall? Why are all these people coming here and crying at this wall? They were perplexed. And all of a sudden, one of them burst out crying. So his friend said, "What are you crying about? I understand these Jews, right, religious Jews are coming. They know something about this wall that we don't know. And they feel there's a reason to cry. But you, just like me, we have no idea what this is all about. What are you crying about?" He said, "That's why I'm crying. Because I don't know why there's a reason to cry. And that's the biggest reason to cry." One of the Rabban Hashem to hear the cries of our heart and to see our tears, then there's Jews in this world who don't even know what to cry about. Don't even know what the shofar is. And surely if they heard it, they wouldn't have any idea what it represents. They're not here tonight. But they could be here tonight. If you let the Leit Echad, Rabbi Kahn, be successful. And if you can't help him personally, fill out these cards and maybe you will be able to help him personally. But at least make him your agent. Give him the wherewithal to be able to be successful. So Jews who don't even know what to cry about, they're not even holding by being the baby yet, will at least be able to cry and be able to understand why there's a reason to cry. So if we want the Rabban Hashem to hear our cries, to see our tears, then we have to be able to make it possible for Jews who don't even know how to cry and don't even know what there's to cry about, at least give them the opportunity to be able to cry along with us. And who knows whose tears and whose cries are more significant, ours or perhaps these lost souls who come back. Maybe their tears are the tears that will finally fill up that safe of the Rabban Shalom in that treasure house to the amount of tears that's necessary, that not the shofar of Rosh Hashanah will be hearing, but will hear the shofar of Mashiach, and will all be zoche to a kshiva v'chasima tova, to a good, happy, healthy year, Tovshin Ayin Dalid, the last letters of that year is Ad, Ad Mosai, till when, Rabbanu Shalom? We've cried for so long, since Churban Bayis Sheni. Maybe it's already time, Rabbanu Shalom, that we don't have to cry anymore. And then, Amir Sashem, this year we should be able to hear that final tkiya, the tkiya gedola of Bias HaMashiach, and Heir of Yomim.
Thank you, Rabbi Lev. And Karen, the extended family. On behalf of B'lei V'Chad, thank you all for coming, spending the evening together for this night of inspiration and terror. Please fill out your participation cards and put them in a box in the back on your way out. If anyone has brought a donation to B'lei V'Chad, they can put it in the same box as well. And if you're looking to donate to the organization, please feel free to see Rabbi Tano.